But apparently there's a science lab willing to offer the experience of dying. They can generate what it would feel like to die and see that light at the end of the tunnel. And so they're offering people to...
No, thank you.
No, you don't fancy that?
Good Lord, no.
Oh, wasn't Susan Blackmore involved in some of this research? At least at the early stage, I believe.
It sounds something she might be.
It certainly sounds like the kind of field that she would be involved in. I don't. That's just sort of a half memory that I remember from like a decade or so ago, that they could stimulate the neuron firings in your brain.
I feel as though that's an experience that should be kept for when you actually
a one off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once in a lifetime.
That's a bit creepy.
Yeah, it's a strange thing to want to offer, though.
Yeah. I once sat, talking of Susan Blackmore, I once sat on a panel with her, and the person who was chairing the panel asked us all if there was no such thing as research ethics or ethics boards, what research would you like to do? And Susan Blackmore was there, and Caroline Watt, who heads up the parapsychological department up in Edinburgh. And they both wanted to kill people. I was like, okay, science has gone too far. They were like, oh yeah, we'd like to take someone to the brink of death to see what happens to the brain and then bring them back. It's like, thank God for ethics boards. Hello and welcome to the Spooktator podcast. This is the podcast which examines the stranger elements of life, society, international culture and the media. My name is Hayley Stevens and my co-hosts are Charlie Revel-Smith and Paul Gannon.
Hello everyone.
How are you guys doing?
Yeah. By the time this goes out, I'll have turned 40 and I can't tell you how sobering that is to be 40. So I'm looking forward to having a proper midlife crisis. So if anyone half my age takes an interest in me, that would be great. I might buy a leather jacket, get a bike, take up a golf, go to the gym.
Well, by the time this comes out, I will be 37.
It's not about you, Charlie. It's about me.
Wow. You guys have both got birthdays soon. That's really weird.
What day are you?
I'm 14th of September.
Oh, okay. I'm 16th. How did we only just find this out?
There you go.
By Virgos.
Yeah. Is that just a Virgo thing to point out, though?
Yeah. Such a cool star sign to be.
It is. It's rock and roll.
I'm closer to 40 than I am to 20, which is quite depressing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Oh, boo-hoo.
Hey, it's the oldest that I've ever been, okay? It's hard. My brother's just about to turn 27 in a couple of... No, yeah, 27 in a couple of months. And he's like, I'm so old.
You all make me sick. In fact, I'm not doing this bloody podcast now. I've gone off. I'm in a sulk.
It's way past my bedtime.
God, that was creepy.
Sorry, no, I meant like as an old person.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Still creepy.
I realise that came across as a bit weird. Anyway, in this episode, we're going to talk about ghost accounts from World War One diaries, the latest UK big cat sightings, and round one of X is for the unexplained. So, without further ado, let's get into it.
So, starting off the Spooktator this week, an interesting story from the National Post. Basically, archival research by Canadian historian Tim Cook has found that First World War diaries are more rife with supernatural encounters than one would expect, says the byline on the National Post. And it's a fascinating article because obviously it starts out by talking about the famous story of in 1914 in August about the Angel of Mons, which I know you know a lot more about.
I know a little bit about. Don't big me up, but thank you.
Well, okay, let me put it into context. You know more than me about this. So, can you set up what the Angel of Mons is so we can start there and then move on?
So, the London Evening News in 1914 carried a story which was called The Bowmen, which had been written by Machen, M-A-C-H-E-N. And in this story, it was a very short story, he basically told the story about how the British troops had been rescued by the bowmen of Agincourt, who had come from like the sky and had come to their rescue and helped them to defeat the advancing troops. And in the moment of the story, the soldier who was doing the recollection, you know, the fictional recollection, says that he had muttered in Latin, "St. George, help the English." And he feels something between a shudder and an electric shock pass through his body and perceives a kind of silence. There's a multitude of voices invoking St. George, and before the British lines beyond the trench appear armed men with a shining about them, who then mow down 10,000 German soldiers with volley upon volley of spectral arrows, still sharp from the Hundred Years' War. Not a wound is found upon them, and the German high command can explain the fatalities only as a gas attack. And following this story being published, there was huge interest, and people started reporting it as though it actually happened, when it was a fictional story, and it then became like an urban legend, a folklore story about how these spectral bowmen came out of nowhere to help the British defeat the advancing troops.
So yeah, so that's the big story about World War One ghosts. But as historian Tim Cook has discovered in a bunch of First World War diaries, there was a much more healthy supernatural world going on than we would first expect. And it's fascinating. Having read the article, the overriding feeling I get from it, regardless of the stories that are told, are just how utterly depressing and saddening and traumatizing it must have been to be on the front, because all of these stories you can probably boil down to trauma, what we would call shell shock back then, but is now PTSD. All these things would probably explain away a lot of these encounters, but I think these encounters, by and large, helped all these people get through the First World War, if indeed they did. I don't know what the survival rate of the people who were writing diaries were in terms of, you know, did they carry on afterwards or did they not, but the basic gist is you hear these stories and they tend to be from people in a very, very bad predicament who's given some kind of lease of life or a moment of hope through some kind of supernatural encounter. So he goes through these diaries, Tim Cook, and he talks about how he's been studying for 20 years, dozens and dozens of supernatural accounts. I'm thinking dozens and dozens over 20 years. You should have put more effort in, mate. Thousands and thousands over 20 years. Now you're talking, but dozens, 20 years, you've been killing time. So one of the most vivid encounters, says the National Post, comes from Ghosts Have Warm Hands, a memoir by Canadian veteran Will Bird, published in 1968. Its defining moment comes when the writer, sleeping in a dugout, describes how he was awakened by a ghost of his brother, who'd been killed 2 years before. Steve grinned as he released my hands and then put his warm hand over my mouth as I started to shout for happiness, wrote Will. Saying, "Get your gear," Steve gestured for Mr. Bird to follow him before disappearing, and moments later the shelter in which he'd been sleeping was hit by a shell. So obviously that's a little bit of a, you know, why can't my brain work today? What's the word I'm looking for when you predict the future?
Precognition.
Prediction?
So there's a few stories like this of people feeling things. One Canadian infantryman, Glenn, I believe his name is Glenn Irium, also described the otherworldly feeling of surveying a devastated battleground. You could feel the pulse of thousands of the dead with their pale hands protruding through the mud here and beckoning you. You could feel the presence not of something not of this earth, akin to goblins. And that's the other thing as well. A lot of these accounts talk about how you would look out over, you know, your dugout and see the land ahead of you with skeletal arms and skulls hanging out where they couldn't have buried the dead very well. And depending on where you are in the trenches, you could probably smell the thousands and thousands of corpses that were around you. So it makes complete sense to me that these people have been dealing with this trauma in various ways.
It's also not to mention that with there being grenades going off and things, that even buried bodies were actually being thrown up from the from warfare going on. That there were, you know, there were parts. A lot of the bodies weren't actually even accessible because it was no man's land, so you couldn't get to these people. So they were just left out there rotting, essentially. It's one of the big things when people talk about the Christmas Day ceasefire. In 1918, I believe it was, where famously everyone put down their weapons and sort of had a Christmas day together. One of the first things that people did was bury their dead on both sides because they were actually able to get to them for the first time. Turns out warfare is actually really, really horrible.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah. Too new. There's a nice little quote here where he goes, Tim Cook talks about how during training or in non-combat roles, there were very little pieces of evidence for spectral visions, but it was all reserved for the front lines, in which he says was the borderline between life and death. And yes, that's very true. It would have been. He says, not only were these guys living on sites of mass murder, but they were literally cheek to jowl with the dead. And so it's a fascinating article, and I'm sure these diaries are powerful to read outside of any spectral event that happens. You can explain it away with sleep deprivation and stress and trauma and all these kind of things. And so, yes, we in this instance, I think, looking at these supernatural stories are not so much as evidence of life after death, but more about evidence of how life deals with death. And I think that's what these experiences are.
Yeah, the way that the brain actually is able to deal with just unimaginable circumstances. It's no surprise that it throws up just extraordinary things under conditions like that.
But anyway, fascinating article, and I think ultimately well worth looking into it. If you can find any more about Tim Cook and his research, then I recommend you do, because it sounds like a fascinating little piece of history.
I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm a bit obsessed with big cat sightings in the UK. It's kind of ghosts in the number one spot, then lake monsters in the number two spot, because I love Bo Nessie and the Loch Ness Monster, and then alien big cats, which is the name given to big cats in the wild where they should be.
I thought you said meerkats. All right, got it. I'm on page now. Got it.
Everybody loves meerkats.
I do love a meerkat. Their insurance is pretty comparable. There are so many people who are not going to get that joke, and I'm not going to explain it.
No,
good.
When I was a child, I grew up in a village called Hilperton, which was gripped in its own big cat drama for at least a decade. And the panther sightings in the village, and this was a very small village at the time. It's grown bigger now. They've kind of developed fields and stuff that I used to plough on as a kid. There are houses there now. But at the time, you could walk from one end of the village to the other in like 20 minutes. And so there were sightings of panthers in this village, and it freaked me out. And the panther sightings that were reported morphed into the infamous Beast of Trowbridge, which is a big cat said to live in the area of Trowbridge, which is the county town of Wiltshire, and is also the next town over from where I currently live. In fact, one of the main Beast of Trowbridge sightings took place about 3 minutes from my house. So I guess actually it's the Beast of Hilperton, Trowbridge, Brafron, Avon and surrounding areas. Anyway, every year in the UK, ever since, like, I would have been about six when I first became aware of this so-called big cat, which now must be really old because it's still around. And, you know, I'm 31 now, so it's probably been around for 26 years.
So life expectancy of a panther.
Yeah, I don't think they live that long. Hang on, what is the life expectancy panthers? It's given me the life expectancy of a jaguar, which is 12 to 15 years. A leopard is 12 to 17.
I think that jaguar is the right answer there, because I believe that a panther is genetically identical to a jaguar, but it's black.
Okay.
It's like genetic mutation.
Yeah. The tiger can live up to 26 years, apparently, so that's interesting.
Good for them, tigers.
Yeah.
Well done.
Go tigers.
Yes.
But anyway, ever since my village was gripped in this big cat drama, and I lived in terror every single day of my life because our house was surrounded by fields where the panther was said to roam, I've been fascinated with sightings of big cats in the UK. And I have noticed a bit of a trend. I don't know if there is any correlation and causation going on, but it seems that as the summer starts to approach, people start seeing big cats. And this year was no different. It started in May when the Dundee Carrier reported that mysterious remains had been found up a tree. They The title of the piece was Mystery Over Horrible Remains Found Up a Tree. And it went on to report that a dog walker called Susan David was horrified to spot a bleached carcass of what looked like a horse halfway up a tree. She was out walking her dog near King's Cat when she made the grim find on a popular dog walking route near the former mining village of Lacedy. It was horrible, really horrible, she said. You can walk straight up to where the old pit used to be. A lot of dog walkers walk up there. I was just on the path walking towards the old pit when I saw it. It was awful. I was just glad there wasn't any kids with me. You could still see where its eyes were. While animal bones are a common sight in rural communities, what is perplexing in this case is the location of the bones, including a skull, spine and ribs. And it is a bit weird for a horse carcass to be up a tree, really.
Yeah, I mean, it was the up the tree bit is more alarming than the horse carcass.
It happens to me all the time. I'm always pulling horses out of trees, mate.
Some people have suggested that it's actually the remains of a sheep, and other people have said that it's just a prank. But there are also conspiracy theorists wondering if the remains are the work of one of the mythological big beasts alleged to roam the Fife countryside. There have been apparently several sightings of large cats over the years, most famously the Beast of Blairdam, which I've never heard of.
In that case, the words "most famously" should be putting quotations.
Yeah, and as someone from Cornwall, I think Beast of Bodmin Moor has got to be the most famous of the lot.
And as someone from Bradford-on-Avon, I think the Beast of Trowbridge is actually the number one cat. Thank you very much. Miss Davis said her husband had had advice from wildlife experts who believed the carcass is that of a horse. Who knows? I don't think it was ever confirm what it was, but the council officers who dealt with it said it was more likely to be a sheep. I think it probably was more likely to be a sheep. But how a sheep got up a tree, I don't know. If anyone knows, write in and let us know.
I think it's most likely to be quite a gruesome hoax by somebody.
Yeah.
That people do go out of their ways to do enormous things like this. The thing which I always remember about the Beast of Bodmin Moor, and we used to go to Bodmin Moor quite a lot with school trips and things like that. It wasn't that far from where I lived. But sometime in the mid-90s, somebody found a skull of what looked like a big cat on the moor. And it was sent to, it was some genetic department, I think, of a museum, somewhere like a naturalistic museum or something, and they analysed it, and it was supposedly like a leopard or some sort of big cat like that, but it was believed that it didn't die in Britain and was most likely the head of a rug at some point. And so somebody had obviously cut it out of a rug, left it on the moor, and then just waited around for somebody to find it.
I'm more shocked that they leave the skulls in rugs.
Yeah, I suppose you need something to give it that bit of rigidity to it.
Just a bit upsetting, to be honest, for thinking that.
Yeah. Now, in the same month as this sheep and horse in a tree, a woman in Birmingham claimed that she had caught a lion on CCTV footage filming the outside of her home. In Birmingham, I'll repeat that, a lion in Birmingham. And it does look incredibly like a lion if you've never seen a lion before.
So what does it look like then?
Let me send you the video, guys, and
okay,
it's a Daily Mail article, so it might take a little while to load, but
Daily Mail, I'm trying to cut back on going to the Daily Mail. I kind of feel like just the Daily Mail is like a porn site for me. It's like I don't want to be caught on it, but there's stuff on it I really want to read.
Yeah, you feel you need to clear your history after visiting it.
I mean, it looks like a big animal, but it's not a lion unless it's a female lion.
Why? What's wrong with female lions?
Well, no, isn't it? Doesn't the female lion have no mane? So.
Oh, I see. Okay, I thought you were saying it was.
I'm not making a sexist comment about animal gender.
To me, I mean, if you look at this in context, firstly, I should say that the woman, her name's Dawn Page, claims to have spotted a lion outside her home when she checked her cameras after noticing that her rubbish bins had been moved. And after watching the footage, she believes it's a female lion roaming the streets, while others think it's probably just a big dog. And when you look at it in the context of the gateposts and stuff, it does look the size of a big dog, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's the tail that actually seems to be the most dog-like.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of little flick.
I can understand why you might feel a bit alarmed by that, though. It does look like it's kind of prowling.
Because the thing is, where does this come from if it's a big female lion?
Yeah, I mean, has nobody else noticed a lion just, like, roaming around Birmingham? I mean, I've been to Birmingham. I know that cities have, you know, outer areas and that aren't so densely populated, but I'm pretty sure you would still notice a lion walking around.
I mean, there is a degree to which, because it has, like, a very flat, straight back, which is sort of reminiscent of a lion.
Yeah.
But there's also, because I've just brought up a still image of it, and it's not entirely apparent which parts of it are the actual supposed lion, which are bits of street furniture and things like that. But also the main thing is that we don't have any scale of how big this thing is.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to tell how large a creature it actually is. True. But there would be footage of a lion absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot an animal like that can't hide in a city. Just where I am now, I'm fully aware of just how many foxes there are, and I can individually tell them apart. They have, like, little marking indications. Oh. And that's just something as small as a fox, which is not much bigger than a domestic cat.
Foxes are lovely.
Not when they're having sex in your garden, they're not.
Oh, no, that is the most terrifying sound that you could possibly hear. But no, just as a little aside, they actually come to my whistle now because I feed them each evening. So I can actually draw them out. I know there are four of them and I can tell them all apart. But something as large as a lion, it should go without even saying it could not be in an urban environment for more than a few seconds before someone noticed
it. And I feel like a lion, you would, if that was a lion, you would know it was a lion. There would be no mistaking it for a dog. I mean, I live near Longleat Safari Park. I'm pretty sure you guys have been to zoos and safari parks. I'm sure our listeners have as well. Those lions are huge. They're huge. There is no way. If you saw a lion, you would go, that's a fucking lion. You wouldn't go, oh, I think that might be a lion. Or it could have been a really large dog. No, a large dog next to a lion would still look small. Like, they're big.
Is it worth asking the people of Birmingham to check the lamppost and see if there's a little post that's talked to them that says missing giant female lion? And just, you know, if there's a number we can call up to see if we can find this.
Well, apparently the nearby zoo were contacted and they confirmed that no lions had escaped. But then...
Yeah, that's what they would say, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they lost one. If I was a zoo, I'd be like, no, we haven't lost any lions. No, they're all accounted for. And I would distract you from the guy in a lion suit pretending to be a lion for the one that we'd lost. Yeah.
Or maybe it's like that thing in Japan that they do when they get people to dress up as, like, bears and then they fake try and capture them. You know, and they fake trank them.
Oh,
so maybe
where was that? Was it in Egypt where there was that horse that was painted up to look like a zebra?
It was Egypt, yeah.
There's always stuff like that going on. So that's May. Then in June, the North Wales Police Rural Crime Officers tweeted an appeal asking if anybody had seen a mysterious large cat around the area of the A5 between Chirk and Llangollen, which are apparently real places. And apparently in 2016, in response to a Freedom of Information request, it was revealed that since 2011, there had been 10 official reports made to North Wales Police of large feline creatures spotted by the public in that area. Then we go on to July. Now, in July, a professional photographer who was in Gloucestershire to take photos of the Royal International Air Tattoo claims that he spotted a giant cat walking along a wall outside of his accommodation. But he missed out on the money shot because he had just dismantled his photography equipment and was about to step into the shower. And apparently by the time he'd managed to grab his camera and reassemble it and had put some clothes on and run down the stairs very quickly, he couldn't find the cat again. But he was so concerned by what he had seen and the fact that there were so many people nearby for the tattoo that he phoned the police. But nothing was ever discovered or followed through on that one. Then, more recently in August, a chap called Tin Statham was walking his border collie dog early in the morning of August 7th at around 6 a.m. in a field near his home. He said he was distracted while looking at the smoke bellowing from a large fire nearby when the sighting happened, and he couldn't believe his eyes. He said, and I quote, I had a double spook. I had just started walking my dog, having come off my night shift. I got to the top of Reservoir Road where you can cut through, I guess. I was looking at the fire. It was distracting me. And then it was the biggest cat I've ever seen, bigger than my border collie. It crawled along in the grass, very cat-like with its tail swinging around. I was absolutely gobsmacked. He got his phone out to take a picture, but the animal had gone before he had a chance to snap it.
It's always funny to for me when you see these people who say, oh, I couldn't get my phone out in time. But they always do when someone falls over or falls down the stairs in a shopping mall. You know what I mean? Or there's like some kind of sad prank that happens. They've always got their phone on hand for that.
Well, this is something I was going to talk about. It always fascinates me that people are never able to take photos of these sightings, like including a professional photographer. But then I kind of thought about all of the times I've ever been in a situation on an investigation or somewhere like that where something weird happens. And I think probably 9 out of 10 times I haven't had a camera in my hand, even though I've got one with me, or I haven't thought to take the photograph because I'm just so absorbed in what's happening or really shocked by what's happening. And I think if I was walking along and I saw a panther or a puma or even, you know, a small lynx or something, I feel as though even as a paranormal investigator, I wonder if I would be so shocked and scared that I wouldn't even think to take a photograph.
It would definitely throw you somewhat, wouldn't it? Of just like, what on earth did I just see?
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking like the most scared I've ever been on an investigation. I can remember being so scared that all of my effort was put in not screaming rather than documenting, which is really bad for a paranormal researcher.
But we were young.
Yeah, I was probably like 20. So I probably still believed at that point, I think. And yeah, but at no point did I think I need to take a photograph of this. I was just like, I need to get out of this building right now.
So Hayley there admitting she's part of the problem. So I think
I think we're all part of the problem as well. Yeah. Because I also wonder if we kind of set up false goals in a way when we say, well, why didn't they take the photo? Because even if they had taken the photo, we still wouldn't believe them.
No,
and we
true.
Would say that the photo doesn't prove anything. Because, you know, we would say, oh, it could be faked. It could have been something else. You can't prove that's when it was taken. If the photo was blurry because their hands are shaking, we'd be like, oh, it's a blurry photo. And you see that with Bigfoot photos all the time. So I guess my question is, will we ever know one way or another if there are indeed panthers, pumas, tigers, or any other type of large cat roaming around in the UK?
Hmm.
I don't think we will.
No, I don't think it will. I mean, it is. It's one of those areas of the paranormal, which I use very loosely, because it is not that much of an outrageous claim, really. That, I mean, it is quite possible that people have privately owned big cats in the past, which they released when there was licensing had to come in and things like that. So it is completely feasible that there were at some point big cats in the wild. How long they actually managed to live, if they ever managed to find other of their species to breed with, is where, and presumably, as we were talking about the lifespan, if they ever were any of them living in the wild, they've all died out now and have been dead for a very long time.
Another cheerful end to a story. Excellent.
It sounded like everyone was just mournfully thinking about the
just corpses,
yes,
everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Just the countryside littered with dead big cats.
I speak to you as the non-gender specific monarch of the supernatural, a title that I won in season 2 of the Spooktator podcast in a newly introduced game that we brought to the podcast called X is for the Unexplained. Now, Paul, I think it's probably best if I just hand this over to you as the host of X is for the Unexplained.
That's right. It's time for another round of X is for the Unexplained, the board game I got in a charity shop for £2, even though the sticker said £4. I beat the system. So, as Hayley said, she is currently reigning supreme. In the last game, she won 4-3 for Charlie, so it's all to play for.
All right, don't
wow,
grab it
you
in.
Actually kept track of the score. Yeah. Like, in Barsha's, you're really shit at that.
Yeah, but that version of me is incompetent. I don't know why people don't understand that I'm not that shit in real life.
Oh, well, okay.
I mean, I'm ever so slightly less shit than Bartians, but not all that much. Anyway, thanks for that concern, by the way. Thanks for that. So, as before, 10 questions in all, 5 questions each. Now, Hayley, I think you should go first as the reigning monarch.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Not really. I'm actually very nervous. Like, the pressure is actually on.
Good. As before, most of these questions are about the supernatural. Mostly they tend to be about aliens, but you'll be given a question and 3 possible answers. You'll have to choose which one you think is real. So here we go, straight in.
Okay.
Question 1 for Hayley. The ghost of which US president was seen by both JFK and Winston Churchill? Was it?
Oh my God.
George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, or Dwight Eisenhower?
Oh God. I don't know the presidents very well. I know that Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Shot in the head by John Wilkes Booth.
Oh, yes, that's right, John. Yeah, in the theatre.
Well, he's definitely shot. I don't know if it was in his head. It might have been.
I'm going to go with... I feel like I want to go with Abraham Lincoln, but I don't know if that's been included just to throw people because he was assassinated and his death is possibly the most...
Washington, Lincoln, or Eisenhower?
I'm going to go with Lincoln.
You said Lincoln, and the answer is... Abraham Lincoln. It's a point for Hayley. Yay,
thank
so there you
Christ
go.
For that. Well, of course there is. I'm the monarch.
All right. Don't let it go to your head, though. Okay, this is an interesting one for Charlie to get started. So here we go.
Right.
Why do the bubbles in Guinness go downwards? What? Is it A? I don't know. I know, right?
What?
And it's the next one I'm pulling out. I don't want to select the cards. I just want to get them randomly. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
So, Charlie, why do the bubbles in Guinness go downwards? Is it A? Gas exchange between the bubbles and the beer. B? Gravity. Or C? Conductivity.
Wow.
What? Can I have can I have the last question, please? Why do the bubbles go down?
I didn't even notice they did go down in Guinness.
Well, for a start, I think that that enormous head on top of a Guinness would suggest that no, they actually don't. But just as you have poured one, I suppose there is somewhat of a downward motion. I would go for the first, the gas exchange.
You said gas exchange.
Yep.
And you are correct. That's a point each.
Well done, Charlie.
Right. So here we go now. The next question for Hayley. Here we go.
Okay.
Who visited the Augusta Country Archery Club in Virginia to the surprise of William Blackburn? Was it A? A vision of the Virgin Mary. Was it B? Several ghosts wishing to play archery, wielding arrows. Or was it C? Two UFOs containing 6 3-foot-high aliens.
Holy shit, what? Well, I can't see the Virgin Mary just rocking up like, hey.
But then it wouldn't have been a surprise, to be fair, if he was expecting
that. But how? Because the Virgin Mary appears in like clouds or on walls or...
Or on the 17th hole of a golf Oh, no, on an archery club, I should be, you know. Maybe it was on the target.
Maybe. The other one, what was the other one? The second one was...
Ghosts and aliens was C. So, was it Virgin Mary, was it naughty ghosts, or was it 3-foot-high aliens?
I'm going to say that it was 3-foot-high aliens.
Oh.
I'm going to say because it's the most plausible, but...
Yeah, what's plausible in this situation? You said aliens, and Hayley, you are correct.
Woo-hoo.
That's 2 for 2. Charlie, it's your turn.
All right.
Here we go. When Mary Hardy Keyser died in unexplained circumstances in 1951, how was she found? A. In a heap of ashes with only her liver and a few bones left. B. She was looking 20 years younger. Or C. She was doing a handstand.
Ooh. I mean, being found dead mid-handstand would be an impressive way to go out.
Especially if rigor mortis had set in. Like, they would have to just bury her with her hands above her head. Just an extra long coffin.
I think surely this has to be spontaneous human combustion. I know that quite often it will be part, like the less fatty parts of your body, like a liver. And I'm sure that I recall seeing a photo of a spontaneous human combustion where it was just a leg left. So yeah. I'm thinking that that was probably her. I'm going to go for the spontaneous human combustion.
Okay, so how did Mary Hardy Keyser die? She was found in a heap of ashes with only her liver and a few bones left. So once again, a point for Charlie. It's 2-2. It's very exciting. You're fighting
getting fit.
Getting
intense.
Right. Okay, Hayley, back to you.
Okay.
Why, in May 1979, did the Filipino villagers decapitate a religious leader and his wife? Was it A, they believed the couple to be possessed of evil spirits? Was it B, they believed that the couple were reincarnations of two historic murderers? Or was it C, previously they had challenged the couple to prove that there was life after death?
That could be that, any of those. Like,
it could be, but it's not. It's only one of them.
Yeah, that's the kicker, isn't it, here?
Like, it is the kicker, that one.
I'm going to go with... See, I was expecting witchcraft to come up. Like, they suspected them to be witches, because that's what they do to witches in some countries. Oh. I'm going to go with the first one, that they were possessed.
Okay, so there was possessed, there was reincarnation of murderers, and proof of life after death. Okay, so you're saying A.
I kind of wanted to go with B, but I'm thinking A.
Okay, well, the real reason that the Filipino villagers decapitated the religious leader and his wife in 1979 was C. They had challenged the couple to prove that there was life after death.
Wow. So they beheaded them and then expected them to comply.
I mean, to be fair, yeah, that's a bit strong.
I'd be like, screw you guys, I'm not showing you anything.
But also, coming back from the dead, I'd like my body to be in one piece. So couldn't they have poisoned them? Or, you know, something else?
Yeah, just like gently strangle them.
Yeah, something considerate.
A gentle strangling.
Anyway, Charlie, on to you. Question 3 for Charlie. Okay, here we go. Oh, how did William Spaldings explain the UFO abduction phenomenon in 1982? Did he say A, angels for heaven were trying to implement God's galaxy plan? Was it B, the CIA was testing mind control drugs? Or was it C, outbreaks of temporary paranoid schizophrenia? So was it angels and God's plan? Was it CIA drugs? Or was it paranoid schizophrenia outbreaks? Which one?
So this was, this is how...
William Spaulding explained away all UFO William experiences. Spaulding.
This is all UFO experiences, not...
yeah, because it...
Not just his,
no,
not his
he,
own.
I don't know who exactly William Spaulding is, but the question here says, how did he explain the UFO abduction phenomenon in 1982?
Right, okay. 1982. I am going to say, because it's a just a big, big, big conspiracy theory you see a lot of the time, is mind control.
Oh, okay.
Which I think was B. Oh, the way you said that was...
No, I'm not...
...filled with confidence.
Do you want to know... who William Spaulding was? He was an academic.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that changes your mind at all, Charlie. Like, if that influenced...
I think I've got to go with my first...
CIA.
...answer.
Okay. Yeah. You said CIA was mind-testing drugs, and that was true because there was the MKUltra program going on. So you could theoretically say it might have been that. And guess what, Charlie? You were right to do so. That's a point.
Hey!
That
oh,
puts you in the lead now. 3-2.
Oh, the pressure is too much. I need that crown.
Wow. Okay.
Hang on, though. At the end of this, do we get the crown at the end of the season, or do we get it at the end of the episode?
I think end of the season. It should be passed back and forth. No, it should be passed back and forth per episode.
No, excuse me.
No, you're right. End of episode. Sorry, I was getting confused.
Just because Hayley can see see her losing in the near future.
I think whoever's got it by the end of the season is the reigning champion, so it's per episode.
Oh,
so
okay.
Hayley's got it right now, but Charlie could snatch it back. It's like capture the flag. It's very exciting. We've just got to make sure we do an even amount of numbers. No, God, brain. An even number amount of these episodes that we do quizzes, so it's a fair win. Yeah?
Oh, that's true, yes.
Okay. Who are we on to now? It's Hayley. It's back to Hayley. Okay.
Yeah.
In 1995, a herd of 206 goats drowned in a lake in Inner Mongolia. How did this come about? Was it A, They had been picked up in a hurricane and flown 50 miles before being dropped in the lake. Was it B? They committed mass suicide. Some of the rescued animals even tried to jump back in. Or was it C? Faulty rubber rings and unauthorized petting. So how did 206 goats drown in a lake in Inner Mongolia?
Sorry, what was the last one?
It just says faulty rubber rings and unauthorized petting. I think that's a very kind of offhand suggestion.
I'm going to go, do you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go with the suicide.
You're going to go with B?
Yeah.
They committed mass suicide. Some of the rescued animals even tried to jump back in.
Yeah, why not?
Well, you were right to do so. It's the correct answer.
Nice. Yeah, there I you knew go. It was right. I knew it was right.
Very exciting. Okay. Back to Charlie for question four. Charlie, why did Turkish farmer Ishmael, can't pronounce that, shoot himself through the head whilst drinking with friends in September 1995? Did he do it because A, they refused to believe his alien abduction story? Was it B, he believed he was the Antichrist? Or was it C, he was trying to remove an aching tooth?
Or was it D, he was trying to kill Bigfoot?
Living in his mind.
Yeah.
So, was it alien abduction, Charlie? Was it he believed he was the Antichrist? Or was he trying to remove an aching tooth?
Let's see. So, this is in Turkey.
This is in Turkey.
And they are drinking. Yeah. So, I'm guessing that means that he's not Muslim. So, he'd be more likely to believe in, like, at least the Christian idea of an Antichrist.
True.
I'm trying to remove a tooth.
It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Oh, I am. Yes.
Oh, I'm going to have to pressure Charlie for time.
I'm gonna go for the tooth, and I think it's probably an accident.
So you said tooth. Of all the ones on there, you said remove a tooth. Well,
yes,
Charlie. Sadly, you were right. It was correct.
Hey.
So that's 4. To Charlie so far, and 3 to Hayley. So Hayley, you kind of need to be in this one to at least draw. So this could be a troubling one. You could end up with you both sharing the crown for a week or so. Right. So we're going on to the last question for you both now. So is this going to be a clean sweep for Charlie, or can Hayley rescue it back and bring it to a draw? So it's the last card. There are 2 questions on each card. So I'm going to ask you if you want front or back. So, Hayley, do you want the front question or the back question?
The back question.
Oh, the back question. Okay. Here we go. Diane Tessman is a New Age channeler who was abducted by extraterrestrials named Tibbus. What are the Earthlings called who are able to hear and respond to Tibbus's messages? Are they called Sharons? Are they called Star Seeds, or are they called the Raiders of the Stellar Winds?
Wow.
Good luck with that one.
Can I just say, had you picked the back card, the question would have been, what was the answer to the meaning of life in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Are you actually serious?
Oh, yeah.
I did choose the back.
Well, the back of the one that I'm reading right now, so it was the front.
Oh. Are you serious? That's the question.
That was the one that you could have had, yeah.
I've literally got that tattooed on my arm.
I had to think you might have gotten it wrong as well. Anyway.
Okay, so it was A, Sharons.
Yeah, spelled Sharrons. Or B, they were called Starseeds. Or C, they were called the Raiders of the Stellar Wind. So what are the name of the Earthlings who could hear Tibbus's messages?
I'm going to go, I feel like Star Seeds is kind of along the same line as kind of like Star Child and Indigo Children.
Oh, and it is,
I'm going to go with that one. Hayley, feel like it's wrong.
Hayley. Should have picked the other question. No, you were right. It is Star Seeds. Oh. You get a point. So it's 4 to Hayley and 4 to Charlie as we reach the final question. So again, Charlie, you can pick the front or the back. What would you like?
I am going for the front, because it sounds like that's where the easy questions are.
Oh dear, you might regret that. Right, okay. In 1992, Charlie, Chinese astrophysicist Dr. Kang Mao Pang stunned a news conference when he told them he had seen photographs taken from Apollo 11's lunar module of a human skeleton on the moon, which was wearing A, a toga, B, a wreath of flowers, or C, a pair of jeans. What was the skeleton on the moon that Apollo 11 saw? What was it wearing?
Toga, a wreath of flowers, or a pair of jeans.
Now, no pressure, but if you get this right, you do win the crown.
I know.
And, if you don't, you are going to have to
what
share.
What would my alternate question have been?
Supposedly, the aliens that were retrieved from the 1947 Roswell accident had, and then it said, suckers, pads on their hands, teeth similar to that of a vampire, or markings that corresponded with Inca hieroglyphs.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it was the third one.
No, it wasn't. The answer was they had suction pads on their fingers, but that was not your question.
Oh, okay. Well, it's actually a good job that wasn't my question. Toga. I'm going to go for wreath of flowers.
So you say wreath of flowers. Oh, connection.
Sorry. You're not fooling anyone, Paul.
Shut up. I'm like Norman Collier, me. Charlie, because of that answer, you and Hayley are sharing the crown until next time, because it was wrong. Unfortunately, the skeleton was wearing a pair of jeans in that photograph.
God's sake.
So, it's four apiece. You're both... share today. You've both drawn.
We don't have a decider.
Do you want a decider?
Maybe just one more, and then... Yeah.
All right. I tell you what. I'll give you one question, and you both have to answer it. We'll see where that goes, yeah?
But what if we both answered them?
Well, don't.
Okay, how about do it rapid fire? And Hayley does one side, I do the other side.
Yeah. Okay, we'll just do one card each. So here's side A for Hayley. Here we go. To get a winner. Which actor, after having a premonition, tried to warn James Dean away from the car that would kill him? Was it Montgomery Clift? Was it Marlon Brando? Or was it Alec Guinness? Which one of those actors, Hayley, had an premonition that could have saved James Dean's life?
Marlon Brando.
Is wrong.
Just
damn it.
Did you know what it was, Charlie?
Montgomery Clift.
It was Alec Guinness.
You were correct.
Genuine class.
Oh, okay.
So, Charlie, if you get the back of this card right, you have won the crown.
Oh, wait. If I had gone with the original plan, I would have just won the round if I said we both won.
So, here's your card question, Charlie. Here we go. Why must a wedding cake be cut by both the bride and groom? Is it A, to ensure fertility? Is it B, to bring happiness to the marriage? Or is it C, just for good luck?
I'm going to discount the... I'm going to say the fertility one.
You're going to say fertility?
Yes.
Charlie, you are wearing the crown until next time. You are today's winner. There we go.
I am the non-gender specific monarch, and I could not be more proud. But my reign is going to be bloody and terrifying, and all of Britain shall quake before me.
Wow.
You'll soon realise the mistake you've made, Paul.
Well, it's not my mistake. You're the one who can't get the questions right.
Oh, well, there we go. Enjoy the crown whilst you can.
Until next time.
I'm wearing it right now and it feels fantastic.
All hail Charlie, King of Pointlessness.
King Charles the what? How many Charleses have there been?
Well, he's the first of the supernatural.
Do you guys have anything you'd like to share?
I'm going to be a bit cheeky and say Cheap Show. And the only reason I'm bringing Cheap Show up again, because it's my podcast, is because we hit 100 episodes soon. By the time this goes out...
Congratulations.
Yeah, by the time this goes out, we'll be getting close to it. We're doing two live shows in London. Now, I'd like to say, come and see the live show, but both of them sold out. So, yeah, it's pretty impressive. So
That is awesome.
So if you want to hear a sweary podcast with two angry middle-aged men complaining and arguing over nothing and pointless rubbish that they find in charity shops, then by all means go to Cheap Show. I'm trying to big up the 100th, so that would be lovely.
That's awesome.
Excellent. Well, I would, as always, we'll say a little something for Weird Bristol, the Twitter feed. It's doing quite nicely at the moment. And of course, there is my books, which you can find if you pretty much search anywhere for Charlie Revel Smith.
Charlie, weren't you recently on the radio?
Oh!
Yes, I did a couple of things. It was on the BBC Radio Bristol and also Ujima Radio, which is, I don't know how I ended up on this radio station. It is the black and minority ethnic radio station for Bristol. So, awesome. Yeah, you can find me in either of those places.
I'd just like to share that BuzzFeed Unsolved are currently putting out episodes of season 4 of their true crime series. They don't need me to share that, but it's really good, and I'm sure many of our listeners will love it. You can find them on YouTube, but also they've started putting their episodes on Amazon Prime recently, which is really cool. And they recently did a video about the Colobomb bank robbery, which is really interesting to watch, because there's also a Netflix series at the moment called Evil Genius, which explores that very same crime.
Yes.
And I wasn't going to watch the Netflix series, despite loving true crime stuff, because I found the idea of seeing footage of the bomb exploding to be a bit too invasive. But then when I watched BuzzFeed Unsolved, I learned that everything wasn't necessarily as it seemed with that thing. So now I'm watching Evil Genius on Netflix too, which is also worth a watch if you haven't already watched it. If you don't want to watch either, I'm going to also put a link to an article about the case in the episode notes, because it's really quite interesting. It's the story of the guy who robbed the bank with a collar bomb around his neck, a bomb kind of handcuffed almost to his neck, and he had to do like a trail of clues to find ways of getting
the bomb. It was like a treasure hunt, wasn't it?
Yeah, like a scavenger hunt for clues to stop the bomb exploding. But obviously, because he robbed the bank, he got caught by police and couldn't complete that. And yeah, and then it's about the investigation into what actually happened. So yeah, cool. Check it out. And
great.
So this has been another episode of the Spooktator podcast. You can find links to everything we've discussed at our website, spooktator.co.uk. where you can also find ways of subscribing to the show, leaving reviews, and getting in touch with us, including links to our social media accounts. Please do consider leaving a review wherever it is that you find your podcast, because it does help other people to find our show. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Until then, remember, spooky is in the eye of the beholder.